Blog Talk Radio.
Con los terroristas.
Live Sportsaholics 24/7, the live episode on Wednesday, January 21st. I'm your host, Jordan, joined by my co-host, John. Unfortunately, Nick and Brandon couldn't be with us today, but I'm here with John. How you doing?
I'm doing great. A lot to talk about today.
Well, that's for sure. We got a big episode today. We'll be talking about the controversy surrounding the New England Patriots over this past weekend with Deflategate. We'll also go into a little bit of a preview of the Super Bowl, evaluating the matchup, and also discussing some NBA. We're about at the midway point of the season right now. A lot of disappointment, a lot of surprises. We'll give you a little rundown at the NBA midseason report. As always, if you'd like to call in and voice your opinion, the number to do so is 347-884-8496. That's 347-884-8496. So about last night, some breaking news that the NFL investigation of Deflategate, as they're calling it, that they found that 11 out of the 12 footballs used in the game against New England and Indianapolis were underinflated by at least 2 pounds. 2 pounds of air pressure. What we do know is that before every game, the refs are instructed to inspect the 12 balls that are deemed to be the game balls, and they need to be between 16.5 and 17.5 in weight. And of these 11 balls that were found underweight, they come to each ball is about 16%. Which in the rain makes a huge difference when in terms of gripping the ball, and obviously gave New England a big, big advantage. At the same time, though, it's a little bit early in this process to jump to conclusions. I, for one, have a very strong opinion about this, but those are pretty much the facts that we know right now, and I'll let John begin with, you know, what's going on with this whole scandal? What do you think should happen? Obviously, we don't know what's going to happen, but If it is found that the Patriots were involved in this and someone on the sideline was guilty of this, what do you think should happen?
All right, well, first of all, an important thing to realize about this is that each team brings their own game balls. So the Patriots had their own and the Colts had their own. The Colts footballs were all tested. They were totally legal footballs, pumped up to the proper weight, proper air pressure. However, the Patriots, like you said, they were not. And this is something that's very unfortunate. I don't necessarily know if it would have changed the outcome of the game because it was a 45-7 victory for New England. However, it's much easier to throw in that type of weather when the ball's deflated, much easier to grip it, you know, all these things. An interesting report about this, according to ESPN's Adam Schefter, the NFL was actually made aware of this in November. November 16th, the Patriots played the Colts, and the Colts were suspicious about the balls that were being used after safety Mike Adams intercepted 2 passes. He then handed both of the balls to Indianapolis's equipment manager to hold as souvenirs, and both of those balls were noticeably underinflated. So this brings me to the question, was this reported to the NFL? Because if it was, and the NFL let this happen, I mean, the NFL, there's something wrong with whoever's running the NFL, whoever's in charge of making sure these balls are legal, because that's a huge issue. And
well,
in terms of a penalty,
I think you mentioned the score of the game, 45-7. Now, undoubtedly, I think New England is a far superior team than Indianapolis, and if they want to play fair, they could have beat Indianapolis without you. Even if the balls were inflated to the normal amount, I think New England would have won anyway. However, I think that's irrelevant. I don't think that the score of the game in this whole process should be taken into account. What happened on the field was that the Patriots had a far, far advantage, had a very big advantage, because if you're Indianapolis and you are unaware that the ball is underinflated, think about the receivers going out for a pass. The ball travels differently if it's underinflated. That could lead to interceptions. It could lead to timing issues. Not that, you know, people will say that, oh, okay, the balls were underinflated. Now that's an advantage for both teams. But if Indianapolis is unaware of that and the instructions came from the New England sideline, whether it was Tom Brady or Bill Belichick, then that's a huge, huge advantage for New England.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I will say this. We don't know who was behind this, but don't the Patriots have a bit of a history of cheating? I think
they definitely do.
In terms of his football mind, I have a lot of respect for Bill Belichick. I think he's one of the greatest coaches in the history of the NFL. However, if it was found that Bill Belichick was behind this, you know, what is there to do at this point? You've taken away draft picks in the past. That hasn't hurt them. They already have such an amazing system built there. Taking away a third or a fourth round pick, what's that going to do for New England? They'll still be winning the AFC East every year, and it'll go on as nothing happened. Now, something interesting to point to is that a few years back when Sean Payton was involved in the bounty scandal, when he really didn't do much, definitely deserved punishment, he was suspended for a full season. Now, this is not the first time that Bill Belichick has been caught doing this. I think if it is found that Bill Belichick was behind this, I think he deserves a full year suspension for this. I really do. And something that I know will not happen under any circumstance, but something that if I was Roger Goodell, I'm looking at this, I'm saying, okay, I prove that the Patriots just cheated. They had a huge advantage. They may have cheated against Baltimore also when they were complaining about the inflation of their kicking balls. They may have cheated back in November against Indianapolis, and they definitely cheated in this game. How do you let them play in the Super Bowl? Isn't that a question that needs to be asked? You took away the purity, the integrity of the game. It's no longer a clean game. The game was essentially rigged in favor of the Patriots. How do you let that by and let them have a chance at winning the Super Bowl? I don't understand that.
You know, it's tough because they were cheating, but at the same time, you know, what in terms of this season, I don't know if there's much that can be done. If it is traced before the Super Bowl, if it does come out that they trace back, you know, line of whoever told them to deflate the football, if it does end up being Bill Belichick, I could honestly see him being suspended for the Super Bowl. But saying that the Patriots will not play in the Super Bowl, I don't think that's very logical. It might make sense, but they're not going to tell the Colts that just lost 45-7. They're not going to say, all right, now go to the Super Bowl. In terms of the next season, though, I think there's a lot that can be done. You know, when I first heard about the story, I thought that it was a little bit overblown. However, now looking at it and looking at the history of cheating and looking at how they possibly cheated in other games, I really think that not only do draft picks have to be taken away, not only does the New England organization have to be fined, a hefty fine, I think that Bill Belichick has to be suspended for next season. You know, you made a great point going back to the Sean Payton Bountygate scandal with the Saints. And Payton, who was, you know, not extremely involved in that situation, he was suspended for the whole year. So I don't see much of a difference between that situation and this situation. Both of them were, you know, trying to help their own team win and very illegally doing that.
And the difference in this situation is that there's direct evidence of cheating. You know, back in the bounty scandal, that was something going on within the Saints. That wasn't necessarily putting other teams at a disadvantage. And something I also want to bring up that, you know, I was if you're the NFL and you're going to and you find Bill Belichick guilty and you suspend him for the Super Bowl, is that completely fair? Now you're putting Seattle at a huge advantage when they were involved in any of this. Is that fair to get to the Super Bowl to put Seattle? You know, if you take away Bill Belichick from the Patriots, essentially you're just handing Seattle the Super Bowl. Do they deserve that huge advantage in the biggest game of the year?
I don't necessarily know if they deserve that advantage. I mean, listen, Seahawks fans, and I think the Seahawks themselves will take that. They will gladly take a a much better chance of winning a back-to-back Super Bowl. So I don't think this is the Seahawks being upset. I just think this kind of sets a precedent. Either way the NFL goes to this, it sets a precedent. If the NFL were to say, okay, you cheated, your team won 45-7, but you cheated and what you did helped your team win the game, and we're going to suspend you, that will set a precedent. Or they could even go the other way. They can say, you know what, you cheated, but there's nothing we can do about it right now, so we're going to let you coach. Either way, this is a historical moment, I think, in the NFL on how to handle situations like this, and hopefully it doesn't happen again.
All right. Well, what we do know is that Belichick and the Patriots have a history of cheating. A few years ago, Tom Brady said that he prefers underinflated balls. I think the evidence is there. And if I'm the NFL and I'm able to prove this, I think we're early enough in the process that, in my opinion, I put the Colts in the game. I don't understand how you can have a team that you know that cheated in the Super Bowl. Do I think that'll happen? Absolutely not. But obviously, this what happened on Sunday was completely unacceptable, and we'll have to see what happens.
I agree.
We have Nick calling in to the show. He was able to make it. Nick? Are you on?
Yeah.
All right, how are you doing, Nick?
I'm doing okay. My worst nightmare Super Bowl is about to happen, and I agree with you guys 100%. Cheating is not acceptable. I understand it happened to not affect that particular game as much, but there is much evidence that the Patriots have been cheating throughout the year, and you can't just sit by and say, well, Bill Belichick's a great coach, it didn't affect the game, blah, 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 and let it go on. No, he broke the rules, and there has to be consequences. Just like somebody who breaks the law gets arrested, it's the same kind of thing. Roger Goodell has to stand up and show some guts and actually do what needs to be done. Roger Goodell has not done anything, and I would not be surprised if he doesn't do anything about this cheating scandal, about the deflate gate.
All right, well, we're going to move on for the next part of the show. Just quickly, we'll just go around each of us. The initial matchup is set between New England and Seattle. Both teams are number one in their conferences, Super Bowls. About a little more than a week and a half away. Still a lot to talk about before the big game, but just your initial thoughts and analysis. Who has the advantage? What matchups are you looking for? And if you don't want to give a prediction now, you don't have to, but we'll start with you, Nick. What are your thoughts on this Super Bowl matchup?
Well, it's very interesting because I think, well, here's the thing. The Seahawks play an extremely complex offense, basically a college-styled offense, which I think has really been a secret weapon of theirs that people haven't been recognizing as much because it's so unorthodox. Defenses typically can't handle it. But Bill Belichick is such a great mind. He's so complex himself. His entire coaching style is complex, as we've seen in the past few games. And I think he'd be able to figure out their style of offense and their bend-and-don't-break defense that they play. So I would actually have to, and obviously Tom Brady is a superior quarterback to Russell Wilson. And other than their running game, I would say that the Patriots have a slight edge on offense against the Seahawks. And the Seahawks may have a slight edge on defense, but you never know what Bill Belichick has up his sleeve.
All right, and
yeah,
John, if you want to
chime in. I think one very intriguing matchup in this game will be Tom Brady against this Seahawks secondary, the so-called Legion of Boom. And it's got to be tough for Richard Sherman and Earl Thomas, both of whom are injured, and both of whom are injured pretty seriously. You know, shoulder injury and an elbow injury. Those are pretty serious injuries for guys in the secondary to have. And you're going against arguably the greatest quarterback of all time. I want to see how they do against these receivers. Now, the good news for them is that the Patriots do not have, you know, any spectacular wide receivers. Besides, Rob Gronkowski is a tight end, and that'll be a difficult matchup. It's always a difficult matchup with Gronk. But in terms of wide receivers, I don't think it's going to be that difficult of an individual matchup problem for the Seahawks. But just, you know, Tom Brady doesn't force passes. He makes the smart throws. And they have a solid run game, a good offensive line. So I think the best matchup in this game is going to be Tom Brady versus the Legion of Boom.
All right, and I'll just wrap this up quickly. I think when you look at these two teams, I think they're pretty much the exact opposites. The Seahawks have a solid offense and an incredible defense, while the Patriots have a pretty solid defense that's built around a very solid system and just a great, great offense. I think the matchups to watch is definitely, I think John mentioned it, the secondaries. On one hand, you've got, you know, Richard Sherman and Cam Chancellor and Earl Thomas, you know, obviously the best backfield in the NFL against a pretty, you know, not necessarily superstars for New England. Aside from Rob Gronkowski, you got Brandon LaFell, Julian Edelman. You know, these are wide receivers that can succeed when you have a Pro Bowl quarterback and, you know, a Hall of Fame quarterback throwing them the ball. But what New England does on offense, I think it'll match up very nicely with what Seattle does on defense. Seattle just continues to shut down teams. And I don't know if they necessarily shut down Green Bay, but they shut them down when it counted. Green Bay was able to move the ball in that first half, but when they got deep into the red zone and they got into third and short situations, that's when Seattle's defense really came up big. But one thing that New England is great at is exactly that. I think, you know, Tom Brady is just a completely different quarterback than anything that Seattle has seen this year. Not to say he's better than some of them, but the way that he can operate and the way that he can, you know, be successful in short down situations, that's going to be the difference in the game, in my opinion. I think New England's offense is just so much better than Seattle's with, you know, Seattle, no disrespect to their offense. Marshawn Lynch is a great running back. But if you look at those receivers, I don't think they compare to what New England has. You know, Doug Baldwin was your leading receiver, and you got Luke Wilson starting at tight end. It just doesn't compare to New England. I think for that reason, New England has the advantage in this matchup.
Let me just quickly add one more thing. One thing I like to do, especially in these championship games and playoff games, I like to see what happened the prior game and the mindset of both teams going into the matchup. One reason that I picked Ohio State to win the college football championship was because they played in a very close, very intense, very high-energy game against Ohio State the game before that, as opposed to Oregon, who blew out Florida State. It's a similar situation here. Seahawks, with a classic comeback down 19-7, they win in overtime. And then the Patriots winning 45-7, not even a competition. Also, you could factor in this whole Deflategate thing for the Patriots. That cannot help them out anymore. So I think in terms of a mindset, I think the Seahawks are a little bit more, you know, I don't want to say ready for this game, but possibly a little more focused. I mean, I'm not saying they're going to win, but I think just going into the game, it's interesting to think about, you know, what happened the prior game.
Well, that's a really good point, Sean, but I think you also have to keep in mind that the coach on New England's sideline is just a flat-out genius. And, you know, I think he can maybe use this whole scandal to his advantage, motivate the team more. I'm sure he's got the sleeve. I wouldn't put New England at any disadvantage because they blew out Indianapolis. But I do understand what you're saying with Seattle. They have all the momentum now coming off that win.
Yeah.
So it should be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, so we'll move on to the final part of the show. We got about 10 minutes to go. About midway through January, we've got the NBA season coming to its halfway point. And I think we all three of us can agree that the biggest surprise team, without a doubt, is the Atlanta Hawks, sitting at number one in the Eastern Conference. They've been playing out of their mind. You know, they got a solid starting lineup and a really good roster, but I don't think anybody expected them to be 33-8 at this point in the season and on pace for whatever, close to, you know, 60, 70 wins on the season. That would just be absurd if you told me that before the season starts. So I'll go to you, Nick. You know, what has been behind Atlanta's success, and how far do you think they can take this?
Well, you basically said it best. They've simply been playing out of their minds. You look at that roster, and you don't think that's a 33-8 team. But the thing is, like, they're great now, and they may be great in the regular season. I'm not trying to be Mr. Negativity, but it's a long season. I'm with all honor to what they've done this year, and I really appreciate what they've done. But I'm not convinced that they're going to keep it up throughout the entire year, throughout the entire playoffs. They may be playing great so far, but my feeling is I don't envision them keeping it up completely. I think they're going to be a very good playoff team. I think they'll succeed in the playoffs. I just don't see them winning a championship.
Well, when I look at this Atlanta team, I see a very balanced overall lineup. I think you've got, you know, Al Horford and Paul Millsap down low. Those are two guys that'll battle. They'll out-hustle other big men. They're athletic. They can move. They can shoot the ball. They can do pretty much everything down low, and that's a great combo in the four and the five. And then you've got Jeff Teague at point guard, who's great at running the offense. He can slow the pace down. He can run the fast break.
He controls.
He can pretty much do it all. And he definitely should be an all-star this year, in my opinion. And then you've got this incredible performance of the season. It's definitely Kyle Korver. I think he's having probably his best season as a pro. He is shooting the ball from the three-point line at 53%. And if I remember reading a stat correctly, there's only six or seven players in the NBA who have a higher field goal percentage overall from two-point land. You know, that just shows you how well he's been shooting the ball. Mm-hmm. You can make the case that he should be an all-star this year as well. I think those four players are really carrying the Hawks. Now, as Nick said, will they be able to keep it up? We'll have to see. It's a long season. But one thing to keep in mind, the Eastern Conference is really awful this year, as it has been in the past 2 years. So you never know. And, John, do you think Atlanta's the team to be in the East? Or if not, who else is there?
There's no doubt in my mind that the Atlanta Hawks are the team to beat in the Eastern Conference. Until they potentially turn it around, I don't know if they will. But I'm just looking at some stats. Right now, points per game, the Hawks are scoring about 103 points a game. That's seventh best in the NBA. But Nick's talking about how the Hawks can't win a championship. You know what? Offense wins games. Defense wins championships. And the Atlanta Hawks are holding opponents to 96 points a game. That's the best in the NBA, okay? So right there, that stat alone tells me that the Hawks are not only the team to beat in the East, they can honestly be, you know, the team to beat in the NBA. I really think that they can beat anyone in a seven-game series because they don't rely on one guy. Like you said, I believe it's Jordan, they're a very well-balanced team, top to bottom. They have guys that could come in any given night and score, and they all score. It's not a team like the Warriors, who have Steph Curry, who's their star player, is their star scorer. This is a team that if one guy's off, another guy will step up. And like I said, they also play great defense. So they are the team to beat in the East until the Cavs turn it around, if they ever do. I don't know if they will.
Now let me ask you a question. Do you think the Hawks?
Yeah.
Do you think the Hawks can beat the Warriors? I mean, they definitely can.
I think that they can. I definitely think that they can, because just look at the matchups.
Listen to this.
Jeff Teague is, he'll be guarding Steph Curry, and Jeff Teague is an incredible defender. Very quick, very athletic. He can honestly lock down Curry. I mean, when I say lock down, I mean holding Curry to 25 points. And you look at some other matchups, the Warriors don't have much of an inside presence. The Hawks do. So I really think that the Hawks can beat any team in the NBA in a seven-game series.
I agree with you. I think they can beat any team in the NBA. That really wasn't my question. My question was more, say, would you put money on the Hawks if they played the Warriors?
I would. I definitely would. There's no doubt in my mind because,
okay.
Yeah.
Go on, Thorne.
I put my money on Golden State that game.
I think the Atlanta Hawks are, I think John is correct in saying they are the team to be in the Eastern Conference. I think there will be a slight drop-off in the second half of the season just because it's almost impossible to sustain this level of play. But when you look at the rest of the Eastern Conference, right now you got Chicago, who's the team to beat going into the season. They're starting to stumble a little bit, which is we'll see if they get together. I don't know if they will. You got Washington. I think when you compare these two teams, I'd rather take Atlanta than Washington. And, of course, you got Cleveland, who, you know, I think they'll improve in the second half once they learn to play with each other more and they finalize a roster with all these moving parts. I think they'll be better. But I don't think that they have the chemistry. I don't think that they have the coaching that Atlanta has. I think Atlanta is the team to beat. And you can also throw Toronto in there. They've had a very good season up to date, but they've been struggling the past few weeks. I just look at this Atlanta team. They're the team to beat in the East. How they compare to the top teams in the West is a whole different story, because in the West you've got Oklahoma City, you've got Golden State, you've got San Antonio, Houston, Portland. These are teams that play a different style of play. They're more offensive-minded. Atlanta's more defensive-minded, which I think could benefit Atlanta. But if in terms of talent, those teams that I mentioned in the West are more talented than Atlanta, without a doubt. But that's not to discredit Atlanta. It's not all about talent in the NBA. And right now they're showing that.
Yeah, I think you made a good point how talent's not everything. And the Atlanta Hawks themselves, I tell you, they are not the most talented team of the NBA. However,
No. They
are deep, and they have someone that can fill every single position in the court. They have a point guard that can drive. They have a shooter. They have two inside guys. They have a guy, Pero Antić. He's a very, very good shooter. Dennis Schroeder, a young athletic guy.
Mm-hmm.
Thabo Sefolosha,
mm-hmm.
one of the top
mm-hmm.
defenders in the NBA. So there's no doubt in my mind
and
that this team could compete.
And Damari Carroll, who's been playing
Damari Carroll,
very
good, yeah. Mm-hmm. And
all right, so
I'm just looking at some other teams in the East right now, and I don't see any team being able to catch up to them.
Well, I agree with that, but there's still 40 games to go.
Yeah, there's still time.
Anything could happen. And once you get into
yep.
a playoff series, you know, once you make it to the playoffs, then you really know, after looking at the past few years, that really anything could happen in a seven-game series. So right now,
it's a brand new season.
Halfway through the season, exactly. It is a brand new season, as the New Jersey
Nets basketball
have shown us. So, okay. We got about a little over a minute to go on the show. Just some quick announcements. Over the next couple of days, you'll see some major changes to Sportsaholics. We've got some great things coming. We're really going to be evolving Sportsaholics and taking it to the next level. We've got some really great surprises in store. So stay tuned. Make sure you follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and stay updated, because we've got some great changes and some really great improvements that we'll be making. And you can follow all the change and everything that's going on our social media accounts. So that, I think, wraps up the show for today. I'm your host, Jordan. We'll be back. Stay updated. We'll be back probably next week with another show. And have a great rest of the week and a great weekend.
Thanks for listening.
Con los terroristas.